This is Patient Care Theory 2, Unit 5, Part 4, Labor and Delivery. So let's talk about labor. So are you guys covering this in AMP patho right now?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
When does that happen?
I think it's last, like if we have one of those
things.
Oh, if we have time. Okay. Fair enough.
So, yeah.
I think we skipped
one. Did we skip one?
Yeah, newborn transition.
No, that's you're on your own for that one. That's a video on Blackboard. So please, yeah. So first stage of labor is defined as the beginning of contractions to full cervical dilation. We don't assess cervical dilation, so you're not permitted to put your fingers inside the vagina. Now, we do insert fingers in the vagina under certain circumstances. So for example, if there's a prolapsed cord and we have to put our fingers in to try to move the fetus head away from the cord to take the pressure off the cord, that's what we do. But and that's considered a controlled act. But generally speaking, we don't use our fingers for a cervical examination. Yeah. Yeah, but your hands are outside. Yeah, your hands are sitting outside. You're supporting the baby's head. We'll get to that, yeah. Yeah, so it's a bit of a gray area, let's just put it that way. Let me just put it another way. There was someone in Nova Scotia whose wife had delivered a baby recently, and he seemed to think that it was okay for him to see how far along mom was, whether she was dilated, because he'd seen his wife examined and felt he was qualified, and examined her with a non-sterile glove, a pair of non-sterile gloves, and she complained, and he was charged with assault and lost his job and ended up a year on probation. So it's a pretty serious matter. So the second stage of labor is when the baby enters the birth canal and is born, right? So first stage of labor, onset of contractions, and second stage of labor, delivery of the baby. Third stage is delivery of the placenta, and this typically occurs anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes after birth of the baby. So this is something we prepare for, but we if it doesn't happen right away, we don't delay scene time. The only tricky part is if mom's on the second floor and getting her downstairs, does she walk with some help? Or that's probably your best bet. Or do we get her on a stair chair? And do we really want her in a stair chair if she's going to deliver the placenta? It's a judgment call. So stage one, dilation. So the onset of true contractions to full dilation and effacement, which is a thinning of the cervix, is expressed in percentage. And so once mom reaches 100% effacement, the pushing begins typically. Stage two, and you can tell, you know, men came up with the medical language, because I don't know who would choose the word expulsion. That just sounds so insensitive, you know. You'll notice in medicine there are a lot of terms that are almost military, you know, like explosive diarrhea. But then again, I've seen explosive diarrhea. I've seen how an entire bathroom, wall, ceiling, everything is covered in diarrhea. So explosive, I'm not sure if there's any better word to describe, you know, what that is. Angry, yeah. Now we're giving it emotions. I don't know.
Diarrhea plus.
What's that? Diarrhea triple plus, yeah. What's the first plus? A leak. Number two is. Number two. Let's not go there. So, stage two, expulsion. I wouldn't use this terminology on the scene. Let's prepare for expulsion of this baby. What? Imagine if we use proper terminology with mom and dad, preparing for expulsion. Stage two, expulsion. All right, so full dilation and delivery of the fetus is stage 2, and stage 3 is placental. So if the birth is imminent, you know, if mom's lying on the floor and she's ready to give birth, the very first thing you want to do with your non-sterile glove, unfortunately it would be nice if you had a sterile glove, but non-sterile glove, is quickly get down and put your hand on the head and keep the head from coming out too quickly. If the head comes out too quickly, you can get perineal tears, and that's not good for mom. I mean, that might happen anyway, but we want to minimize the degree of expulsion, if you will. Alyssa, did you have a question?
Like the gloves in the burn kit are considered more sterile than the regular gloves?
They're considered sterile, yeah, absolutely sterile. And the ones with the obstetrical kit are considered sterile too, yeah. Yeah, so I'm assuming you guys are going to go over how to don sterile gloves in the lab. Have you gone over that? No? Okay, probably will at some point. Because putting them on is a different technique, because they are sterile. Basically, if my partner is going to support the head, I would get out the obstetrical kit and prepare the sterile gloves for her and get her to put those on. And I might take over holding the head until she gets her sterile gloves on and delivers a baby. Or I might knock her over because I haven't delivered a baby in the field and, you know, I might pull rank. Then if it gets complicated, I'll give it back to her. Yeah, no, you can do it now. So crowning. Primeps. First pregnancy, first delivery, presenting part, visible during and between contractions. So birth is imminent if the presenting part is visible during and between contractions. If you're seeing kind of a turtling effect with a primip, you might have time to transport. Urge to push, bear down, restless, contractions less than 2 minutes apart. With multips, if the contractions are 5 minutes apart or less, or are there any other signs of second stage of labor, like urge to push, bear down, heavy red show, presenting part is bulging, membranes visible at the vaginal orifice, that would be considered an imminent birth. Remember when I was in college, I don't know why they taught us this, but they taught us that one of the signs of imminent birth is the anal sphincter puckers out. They call it patulous everted, which to me sounds like a Hogwarts spell. Patulous everted! Baby comes out. It's such an odd name for sphincter puckering. But, all right, crowning. So support the head to prevent an explosive birth. Again, I'm sorry, it's men. I apologize for all men. Men are a source of all the world's problems, pretty much. You know, I feel this way because I grew up with three sisters, right? So I was, that's my influence. You may need to stretch the perineum. And that means slipping a finger just inside and actually stretching on either side. Now, when you get to the birthing unit, this is grossing you out. I'm never going to have a baby. Oh, you already have one. Yeah. Sometimes it's worth seeing it the second time around or from a different perspective, you know? I just thank God I'm a man, that's all. No babies, no menstrual cycles. I can pee anywhere. Life is good. Like I'm truly grateful for all my blessings. Okay, enough about me. So, but be prepared for tearing and bleeding anyway. Now, when you birth the head, you can see a 4x4 here. Some people will put a dressing on there just to, because everything's so slippery. What I found amazing when I was helping with deliveries in the birthing unit, when I did my training years ago, how mom's bum is at the end of the bed and the obstetrician delivers a baby, but there's no net to catch this thing. And these babies are very slippery. That always boggled my mind. But anyway, so we guide the baby's head out, and the baby's head will usually rotate on its own, but we can give it some gentle rotation. And then when we get the head into this position, right or left side, we want to lower the head so the shoulder, the anterior shoulder, doesn't get caught underneath the pubic bone. Because if it gets wedged under the pubic bone, that can impede delivery, and that can be life-threatening for the baby. So we lower the head. So ideally you want mom's buttocks at the end of the bed, and ideally two additional people holding her knees back to facilitate opening of the pelvis. And so we lower the head down, and then we deliver the baby. Now, we used to routinely suction the mouth and nose. We don't do that anymore. The only time we suction the mouth and nose when the head comes out is if there's a significant meconium staining. Meconium is the first poop, and it's usually a dark, tarry color. And if it appears as though the mouth and nose is really filled with this stuff, then we suction the mouth first and then the nose. The mouth first and then the nose, because babies are obligate nose breathers. And what that means is that if you suction the nose, it may stimulate their reflex to breathe, and they may aspirate whatever's in the mouth. So we suction the mouth first and then the nose. If you've ever had kids or you've spent some time with a young niece or nephew, you know that they're obligate nose breathers for a good year or two. I remember my daughter, if she got a cold, she wouldn't just open her mouth and breathe through her mouth like you and I do. She would breathe like this. And I would stand there and look at her and say, come on, honey, just open the mouth. Come on, just open the mouth. It'll be so much easier. No, this didn't happen. And I tried suctioning her nose with a bulb suction. That just got her really upset and made her even more distressed. So that was a dumb idea. So we want to try to deliver the anterior shoulder first, right? So it doesn't get caught underneath the symphysis pubis. And then the rest of the baby should deliver pretty easily. Now the first objective when the baby delivers is dry the baby right away. Put the baby up at mom's breast. Unless she says, I'm not going to breastfeed. But even if she says she's not going to breastfeed, put the baby up at mom's breast anyway, so to keep the baby warm, and then wrap the baby in warm towels. Now, if you got time, I'll send dad off to throw some towels in the dryer so we got some warm towels. But when you dry and warm the baby, it's really important that, you're going to be nervous the first time, but you want to dry that baby with a towel and then throw that towel out and grab another towel to warm it with. Because with nerves, we tend to, there's a risk that you dry the kid and then wrap the kid with the same wet towel, and that's not good. Babies will lose heat very, very quickly. But let's get to that in a second. So mom at the breast, wrap the baby. About 10 centimeters above the baby's belly, we'll clamp the cord, and then another 5 centimeters and clamp the cord again. So a couple of inches there. And then cut in between. Now, some people will get dad to cut the cord. It's like a ceremonial cord cutting thing, and that's fine. I remember I went to this delivery, and the medic was, dad had gone downstairs to get something, and we were waiting for dad to cut the cord, and I'm thinking, just cut the damn cord. Like, dad will survive if he doesn't cut the cord. We've got more important things to do here. But it's a nice thing for dad. And you want to cut at least 10 centimeters above, because in the hospital, they may use the umbilical vein for venous access. So they may put a catheter down that. So they'll cut a little bit off, and then they'll put a venous catheter in there. So now, cutting the cord should be about 2 minutes post-delivery. So in the ideal situation, if you've got extra hands on the scene, someone should be keeping time, with a stopwatch or something. Everyone's got a phone, and you can just use the stopwatch function on the phone to keep time. So about 2 minutes. And what they found is that there's been improvement in the child's health when the cord cutting has been delayed about 2 minutes, because there's a continuous transfer of products of immunity from mom to baby during that period. Now, you don't want to put the baby, too high above mom or too low below mom before the cord is clamped, because if you think about this, if the baby's too high, blood will run down the cord and the kid could become hypovolemic. If the kid's too low, the kid could become hypervolemic. At least this is the theory. So baby to breast is fine. We talked about that. In terms of neonatal care, you want to make sure you support the infant's head and torso using both hands, right? Because they have no strength in their neck and their head is proportionately larger. And dry the newborn, maintain warmth. A full term newborn will have, they basically burn their what they call brown fat to generate heat. And they have limited brown fat stores. And if they're premature, they may have no brown fat stores. And so they lose heat very quickly. And when they lose heat, they burn sugar and they become hypoglycemic. So a newborn is one of the few situations where you can get hypoglycemia despite the absence of diabetes. So you got to keep them warm. The last baby that I was involved in delivering, I dried and warmed the baby. And this was in the middle of summer, very hot summer day. And we did everything the way we should have done it. And the other crew transported baby, we transported mom. In the back of the ambulance, I didn't turn the air conditioning on, so it was a good 28 degrees or so in the back of the ambulance. It was room temperature, basically. And even that can be a little bit low. And when we got to the hospital, the baby's core temperature was 34. And the nurses were not happy about that. They complained to the service. I don't know there's a whole lot you can do when you're delivering a baby in an air-conditioned environment. In the hospital, the baby goes straight from mom to the incubator where they're warm, right? We don't have that luxury. But it certainly gave us something to think about. So we got these neonate transport kits, and they have pockets in them, and you can put hot packs in there. So that was the plan after that incident, was to the way to keep the baby warm. But you wouldn't want hot packs directly against the baby's skin. You can make their temperature excessively high or burn them, right? So, yep, Riley. Well, it's partly to stimulate them, but you have to dry them fairly vigorous to dry them off, because they have, they just have a lot of fluids on them, and they have some vernix, which is kind of a white sticky substance. Well, it stimulates them to cry, which is good, and crying gets them breathing adequately, right? So that's one of the reasons. And the second reason is mainly because you don't want the baby's temperature to fall, so you dry them off very vigorously and then wrap them up and swaddle them. If you get the chance, you want to practice swaddling in the lab. If you've never swaddled a baby before, practice swaddling, which is how you wrap them in a towel. So I haven't swaddled in a while now. Probably need to practice it. But swaddle. For whatever reason, babies are very comfortable like this, wrapped, whereas most adults would be so claustrophobic you couldn't handle it. I did outdoor camping survival stuff, and I couldn't even handle being in a one-person sleeping bag. Like, that's how claustrophobic I felt. And I'm not normally claustrophobic, but in a one-person sleeping bag, it freaked me out a little bit. Any other stimulation is probably not necessary. If after drying and warming the baby is not responding, if their heart rate's low or they're not breathing adequately, they probably need resuscitation like bag valve mass ventilation, but we'll get to that in a second. So in hospital, they'll do APGAR scores, and I don't want you to memorize the scores, but you should memorize what APGAR stands for, so appearance, pulse rate, grimace, activity, respiratory effort. It's a good test question, and you should be familiar with APGAR. But there are APGAR apps. I would get one. I have one. Yeah, that works too. The nice thing about the app is that you just punch the numbers in and now you have all the scores. Whereas with a directive, you have to look at it and write it down somewhere else, So the apps are good. When a baby's born and you've dried and warmed the baby, we want to know if the baby's vigorous. And this is defined under your medical directive as good muscle tone, strong respiratory effort, and heart rate of at least 100. So we want to know if the baby's vigorous. And if they're crying, like a good strong cry, then you've probably got good muscle tone and respiratory effort. Allow mom to breastfeed if she's willing and wants to. That stimulates the release of oxytocin, which is a hormone secreted by the pituitary gland, and that stimulates contraction of the uterus and the milk ejection reflex. It also helps to control postpartum hemorrhage, and then go. Placenta, the delivery, that's done en route. Sorry for the graphic photos. Are you okay? This is really unpleasant. I'd say no more hideous photos until the next set of slides. Any questions about delivery? So we'll talk about complications of delivery in a separate presentation. Yeah.
If you just delivered a baby and the mother does not want to hold the baby,
yeah.
What do you do? Like, do you
then hold you hold the baby? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Swaddle the baby.
If she needs ongoing care, though.
Well, then you provide ongoing care, right? So one medic attends to mom, one medic attends to the baby. Ideally, you'll have a second crew there if you're in an urban center, and one crew will look after mom, will look after baby. There'll be unusual circumstances, but it does happen sometimes. And I would.